Hare Krishna. So thank you for coming today for this second session on the Mahabharata characters. Today I will discuss about Draupadi, how she manifests a combination of submission and determination. So Draupadi is born to Drupada. So her other, here she has several other names. One of her names is Panchali, born Panchal Desh. Another name, one of her name is Krishna also, based on the complexion. So now when she was born, actually her father, Drupada, had just been defeated by Drona, and by Drona's students actually, and he wanted to take revenge. And for that he felt that I am not strong enough to defeat. So he defeated Drona. So he said, I want a son who will cause the death of Drona. And for that purpose, he performed a yajna. And while he was performing the yajna, the human mind works often in mysterious ways. So actually, Drona had been the cause of his defeat. Basically, Drona and Drupada had been friends earlier, but later on, when they were in Gurukul, they were friends, but later on Drona remained a relatively poor Brahmin, whereas Drupada became the king. And when Drupada was approached by Drona, Drupada disrespected him, saying that, you know, friendship can only be among equals, and you are no longer equal to me. Now this was an uncharacteristic lapse from Drupada, because Drupada was normally respectful to Brahmanas, but we all are sometimes caught on bad days. We normally are maybe gentle, we will be here, but sometimes somebody catches on a bad day and we just explode at them. And if they form their opinion of us based on that one incident, they will say, hey, this is a very irritable person. So unfortunately, that's what happened to Drupada, and he behaved in a very seriously wrong way. This very grievously disrespected Drupada, Drona. Drona said that, you say that friendship can only be among equals. He said, I'll not only become equal, I'll become better than you. So then he trained the Kauravas and the Pandavas, and then when their training was over, as Guru Dakshina, he asked them that, I want that you bring Drupada arrested in front of me. And so the Kauravas tried to have Drupada arrested, they failed. Then Arjuna and the Pandavas went, and Arjuna defeated Drupada, his army, and he actually had Drupada arrested and brought in front of Drona. And Drona said that, okay, you had said friendship can only be among equals. I wish to revive our friendship. But now you are no longer equal to me. He said that, now you have no kingdom, your kingdom is mine because I have defeated you. So he says, for our friendship's sake, I give you half of the kingdom. He said, let us be friends. Now Drona also spoke this in a little scornful way. So Drupada felt very insulted. By then he said, I'll do austerity by which I'll get a son who will, no, I'll do yajna by which I'll get a son who will kill Drona. But at the same time, the human mind works in such a strange way that when he saw Arjuna, it was Arjuna who had defeated him. But he felt no anger towards Arjuna, because he felt Arjuna was simply doing what his guru had told him. And he felt that Arjuna is such a great warrior, such a hero. He says, if only I could have such a hero as my son. I cannot have him as a son, so I wish I have him as my son-in-law. And thus he desired to have a daughter. So from that same fire sacrifice, Drishtadyumna was born, who was fated, who was destined to kill Drona. And then Draupadi was also born. Now, when Draupadi was born, it was prophecy came at that time, because of her a war will be fought which will cause the destruction of the whole dynasty, of many Kshatriya dynasties it will cause. Now you know the word cause has multiple meanings, and we have to see we will come later to this point about what it means. Something can be a cause, but something need not be responsible for that happening. It's like when rains fall on some ground. So sometimes the rains at some particular places, if the ground has been tilled nicely, their crops come. At other places, if there's been no plowing, no sowing of seeds, then the same rain causes weeds to grow. So we could say the rain is the cause of the weeds. But the rain is not the cause, in the sense that the rain is simply creating the facility, providing the facility for nourishing of the soil with water. Then whatever has been sown, according to that, everything will grow. So whatever is grow. So the rain is the remote cause, we could say, or the ultimate cause. It is not the immediate cause. The specific cause for what grows on the ground, that is what has been sown over there. So it is not, as we will see later, it is not that Draupadi was responsible for the war. Rather, it was around her that the war was fought. And the war was caused by the obstinacy and the wickedness of the Kauravas. So now both Draupadi and Drishtadyumna, because they were mystically born, they were born through fire. So they grew up very quickly. And that's how eventually Arjuna and Draupadi were of compatible age for marriage. Because by this time Arjuna was already young. He was already in his youth. And Draupadi, at that time, Drupada performed a yajna to get a son and a daughter. But those fireborn siblings, they grew very fast. And eventually, Drupada had performed. Drupada wanted to have Arjuna as his son. And when he heard that in the Varnavart house of lakh, the Pandavas had been burned, he was mortified. He said, how is this possible? How could the prophecy have gone wrong? And then some rumors came about. Maybe the Pandavas are still alive. So he thought, I want to find out. So he decided to do a Swayamvar for Draupadi. Now this is interesting because at one level, Draupadi was born and her birth was invoked with a specific purpose that she will marry Arjuna. And yet, now, if that is already destined, then why is he doing a Swayamvar for her? Actually, the Swayamvar was simply an excuse to get Arjuna to appear. So, if Arjuna is alive, then Arjuna will appear. And Arjuna excelled in archery. Now, they could have put as a test anything. They could have put excellence in mace fighting, excellence in spear fighting. But they put the test as excellence in shooting an arrow with a bow. Why? Because that was the area of excellence of Arjuna. So the Swayamvar was not so much for Draupadi to choose her vara, because her vara had already been chosen, it was this time. It was more for to causing her vara to appear, her groom to appear. Now, during that assembly, there were many Kshatriyas who came, and Draupadi was phenomenally beautiful, so they all wanted, and Drupada was also a very powerful kingdom. So at that time, there are two main kingdoms which are very powerful, the Kuru kingdom and the Panchala kingdom. If you look in the Mahabharata at the composition of the armies, you know, the major forces were on the Kaurava side, they had the Kuru forces, and on the Pandava side, they had the Drupada's forces, the Panchala forces. So these were two main forces at that time. So now, if an alliance could be formed between those two powers, then things would be very orderly for the whole subcontinent, in the whole world at large. So now, so he wanted to get Arjuna to come out. Now all the Kshatriyas came because an alliance for any of them with the Panchala king would be a big advantage. So they all came and competed. None of them could actually meet the target. Now, tomorrow I'll talk more about Karna, but let's talk a little bit about him today. So Karna also came to compete. Now Karna was known at that time as a Sutaputra. Sutas are actually charioteers primarily. So he was not considered exactly a Kshatriya. And thus, there was naturally some reservation about, some concern about whether he could compete or not. So now, according to some TV depictions of the Mahabharata, they said that when he wanted to compete, Draupadi told him, you know, I will not marry a Sutra. And because of that, Karna felt very insulted. Now, these are actually all dramatized, sensationalized retellings. I'll come to there are several sections in which Draupadi's character has been negatively sensationalized. So actually, what happened was, now if we look at the Mahabharata, the Mahabharata is a huge book, it's 110,000 verses. You know, it's the not just the world's longest book in terms of one single book. Actually, before the Western world came, Westerners came to India, their idea was that the Iliad and the Odyssey, the two Homeric sagas, they were considered to be the longest poems in human literature. But the Mahabharata is 8 times Iliad and Odyssey combined together. It's phenomenally large. And one challenge because of this is that sometimes some verses are interpolated in it. Because what happens when a book is very big, and especially the Sanskrit of the Mahabharata is also very simple. If you go to the Bhagavatam Sanskrit or go to the Vedic Sanskrit, it's quite difficult. But the epic Sanskrit, the Itihasa Sanskrit is relatively easy. Sometimes some verses can be interpolated. So there is a book called Mahabharata Tatparinirnaya, written by Madhvacharya, where he addresses this point that the Mahabharata has been interpolated and therefore we need to have a systematic understanding of its conclusion. And Madhvacharya offers that conclusion from the perspective of the Madhva Sampradaya in his book. So now he may actually, if we consider that Mahabharata Tatparinirnaya, and there is an academic perspective, there is a critical edition of the Mahabharata that is made. Critical edition means there are scholars who look at all the manuscripts of the Mahabharata that are available, and then they see which particular verse is present in which manuscript, and then they try to look at the context and they see if the verse flows from here to other. They have a whole process by which they determine which verses are interpolated and which verses are actually there originally. So either way, if you look at the traditional understanding which is given by Madhvacharya, we look at the academic understanding which is given by Mahabharata Tatparinirnaya, either way, actually what happens is Karna competes and Karna misses the target. So Karna shoots and his arrow comes closest. It barely misses the target by a whisker, but he misses. Now, even if we say, for argument's sake, that Karna was not allowed to compete, we assume that that is a possibility. But still, we have to understand. See, there is a fundamental principle and there is a secondary principle. The defining principle of Swayamvar is Swayamvar. It is for the bride to choose her groom. And whatever criteria may be secondarily set in archery, whatever criteria set in archery or in any other competition, that is secondary. The primary thing is that the bride is going to choose her groom. So if Draupadi or her family feels that they do not want their daughter to be married into a family whose antecedents are not so proper, then that is their discretion. So now, this is actually not an insult. If you look at it, there are editions of the Mahabharata which also describe that when Arjuna is about to compete, and after all the Kshatriyas compete and none of them succeeds, then Arjuna comes up. And then Arjuna actually asks Drupada and Drishtadyumna, is a Brahmana allowed to compete? Because normally Swayamvar is for Kshatriyas. So now, in the hierarchy, Brahmanas are higher than Kshatriyas. But although Arjuna is a Brahmana, Arjuna asks, is a Brahmana allowed to compete here? He doesn't just presumptuously march ahead and say, I'll compete. So if Arjuna had that deference to the sensitivity of the people over there, Karna could also have had that. And instead of just walking ahead and then being told you cannot compete, he could have inquired first, is he allowed to compete or not? Unfortunately, whatever happened, it was not an intentional plan to insult Karna. This the whole plan was to get Draupadi to find her destined groom, and that was Arjuna. So then Arjuna hit the target, and then Arjuna got the hand of Draupadi. Now after this, then the Pandavas went back home. Most of us know the story that every day they would go. Now the Pandavas were living in the garb of Brahmanas. They were Kshatriyas, But as Kshatriyas, they could be very, you know, Kshatriyas, they are heroic, chivalrous people. And Kshatriyas usually don't live by seeking alms or anything like that. So now, because they were living in the garba Brahmanas. And at that time, there was no camera with photos to click. Otherwise, anybody would know, this is Pandavas over here. So they were not, their identity was not known so easily. But in Krishna saw Arjuna, hey, this is, Krishna told Balaram, hey, isn't that Arjuna? Yeah, but Balaram and Krishna were both delighted to know that Arjuna was alive. So then, the Pandavas go and ask for alms, and when they would get that, they would come and bring it to their mother. And this day also they came, just see your mother, what we have brought for you. So that Kunti thought that, oh, they must have got some very nice food today. So they thought, whatever you have got, share it equally among yourselves. And she just spoke it casually. Sometimes, you know, silence speaks louder than words. So they just come back in a very cheerful mood, and suddenly, deathly silence. So Kunti was done her housework, she just turned around. And she saw this beautifully dressed bride with it. And she realized what she had spoken. She was horrified. What can be done now? So I have already spoken this, what can be done? And Yudhishthira also started thinking. He said, my mind cannot contemplate a sinful activity. But still, I feel that your word, I don't feel any revulsion on hearing your words. So they start thinking, and at that time, Vyasadeva comes. And Vyasadeva tells about Draupadi's previous life. And in her previous life, she had been a maiden and she had wanted a husband, but somehow she was not able to find a suitable groom. So she had performed severe austerities to worship Lord Shiva. And when she performed severe austerities, finally, after a long time, Lord Shiva appeared. And Lord Shiva appeared in her excitement. He said, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband, I want a husband. He said, 5 times. Shiva said, I'll give you 5 husbands. That's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted. He says, no, you will be a part of the plan of the Lord. And Vyasadeva told this, and Yudhishthira was also pacified. Then, in the meanwhile, Drishtadyumna and Drupada, they were worried. They had, normally, you know, whenever a daughter family is getting married, the parents, the family members want to know, where is she getting married? So here they had arranged a Swayamvar, and some unknown Brahman had come and taken their daughter. So Drupada had sent Drishtadyumna behind. See where they are staying. And from their talks, he understood that these are not, you know, the way they were jubilantly discussing the battle, he said, these are not Brahmanas. So then invited them to their palace, and there the Pandavas revealed their identity. And then Vyasadeva repeated the same story, Vyasadeva said that. So Drupada was also taken aback, how can Draupadi marry 5 husbands? So then Vyasadeva told the whole story, and Vyasadeva said, this is actually going to be a part of the plan of the Lord. So the 5 Pandavas were actually 5 very different people. So, especially if you want to see the contrast in character, there's a very strong contrast between Yudhishthir and Bhima. I mentioned this yesterday. And Yudhishthir was like, you know, always trying to find the peaceful way out whenever possible. Bhima was always looking for battle. So, if you look at contemporary Indian history, you know, Yudhishthir was like Gandhiji. Bhima was like Subhash Chandra Bose. Now, both wanted Indian independence. Common cause, but very different purposes, different means for achieving that cause, pursuing that cause. So their character was, if you see the Pandavas, each of them is different. And those 5 Pandavas, actually they were united by Panchali, by Draupadi. So she brought harmony among the diversity of the 5 Pandavas. And thus she plays a very pivotal role in the Mahabharata. Then, when they were married, so at that time, Dhritarashtra called them and gave Khandava Prastha, Khandava to them, which they made into the forest, they made into a city, magnificent city. Then they performed the Rajasuya Yajna. And in the Rajasuya Yajna, Yudhishthir and Draupadi, they were the host and the hostess around whom the yajna was performed, and it was a time of celebration for them, the greatest success, you know, for a king and a queen is to perform the Rajasu Yajna, and the Pandavas performed that. So this was to be a time of great happiness, but there is one person who could not tolerate that happiness, and that was Duryodhana. Shishupal comes late. Shishupal was doing the Rajasu Yajna. Now we are talking about Rajasu Yajna getting over. See, all of us have our triggers. You know, triggers means, see, if I know that I am a short-tempered person, and there are certain circumstances where I tend to become all the more short-tempered. So, if I know that, you know, if I am getting late for something, and my short temper really gets, the fuse goes off at that time. So then if I know that is my trigger, I should be careful to plan my life in such a way that I don't get late. It doesn't require that much planning. I can arrange my life, but if I find there are certain situations in which I get triggered, then it is my responsibility to avoid exposing myself to the triggers. So, you know, some people are, say, addicted to something. Somebody is addicted to alcohol, and they want to give up alcohol. I say, not only should you give up alcohol, but you should also throw out of your life things that remind you of alcohol. Because how the desire comes up, one thing, second thing, third thing, fourth thing, one cannot know. So basically, whatever triggers one has, if we have anartha, if we have weakness, then we have to be, it's our responsibility to avoid exposing ourselves to the triggers associated with that weakness. So Duryodhana, he had a lot of envy towards the Pandavas, and that is a whole long story. But briefly, initially the Pandavas were born in the forest, because Pandu had retired from the world and he was in the Himalayas, and there was no certainty that Pandu will ever have a child, and if he has a child, whether the child will come back to the kingdom. So it was expected that Duryodhana will become the next king. And Duryodhana had thus been pampered by everyone. And children, especially who are born to well-to-do parents, often they have a entitlement mentality. They think, I am entitled to this. And so similarly, Duryodhana had an entitlement complex, where he felt that I was entitled to the kingdom. And suddenly the Pandavas came back, and whereas Duryodhana initially was like the center of the whole family, center of the whole kingdom, he is the prince, he is going to be the heir apparent, he is going to be the next, he is the prince, he is going to be the king, and suddenly he found that these Pandavas, they came, and most people started getting attracted to them, because Duryodhana was, although he was the prince, he was insolent, you know, he was disrespectful quite often. Yes, the Pandavas were courteous, Yudhishthira especially was respectful, learned, gentle. And so he found himself being sidelined. And from that point onwards, he started becoming more and more envious. So that he knew that there was envy towards Yudhishthira that was there. And yet, circumstances happened in such a way that when Yudhishthira performed the Rajasu Yajna, he went around and conquered the whole world. But he did not fight against the Kauravas, because the Kauravas are in the same family. And so, because this was a function performed by the same family, so the Kauravas also went. Dhritarashtra said, I am, because of being blind, I cannot travel, so I will not come. But he told his sons to go. So Duryodhana went, and there Duryodhana, all of them had to take up some different responsibility. Like if you have the marriage in a family, and all the relatives pitch in, and they take up different responsibilities in the marriage. So like this, Rajasu Yajna was a big sacrifice. So Duryodhana got the responsibility of receiving gifts on behalf of Yudhishthira. Now, whatever service he would have got, this was the most provoking for him. Because he has already enemy for the Pandavas, and he said that, you know, I should be getting all this, not them. Why am they getting it? So he could have backed out, he could have asked for some other service, but he did not do that. And you know, as he was seeing so many gifts coming, you know, the gifts were enriching Yudhishthira, but the gifts were also scorching Duryodhana. His heart, you know, it was becoming like a desert, burning, flaming desert. And this was bad enough. But after this, you know, after the ceremony got over, all the relatives left, all the guests who had come left. But somehow Duryodhana got this devilish desire to stay on. He said, like sometimes people, some guests come, and then after that they stay on. So, you know, every guest who outlives their invitation, then they become like unwanted guests. So actually, the Pandavas and Krishna, they had a very friendly relationship, very intimate. So Krishna was staying there, some of the others were also there, but Duryodhana said, I'll also stay. Duryodhana just did not say, so the Pandavas, of course, they were hospital, they allowed him to stay. Now there was this Maya Sabha. There was this assembly which had been made by the Maya Dano for Krishna, or for Arjuna, for Yudhishthira on the behalf, on the instruction of Krishna. And that was especially mysterious, you know. When people make a house, everybody has a house, so people want to show what is special in my house. Maybe from this window you can see this scene, or I got the chandelier, or I have got the whatever it is special. So Yudhishthira's palace, all kings had their palaces. But Yudhishthira's palace, the speciality was this illusory sort of thing. So you look, it appears to be a playing ground, but it turns out to be water over there. It appears to be water, but it's playing ground. So now Duryodhana got deluded by this. So Duryodhana walking along a particular place, he thought it is normal. He came to a particular wall and he thought there is a way out. He thought it is a door over there. And he came there, bang! He hit his head against it. His head was reeling. And then his head was reeling. The Panda, Sahadeva came and said, no. He showed, no, the door is here, he said. Oh, he felt so angry. Basically, you know, great for many people, greater than the fear of losing their head is the fear of losing their face. Losing their face means, you know, to appear stupid, to be dishonored for looking stupid. Duryodhana couldn't tolerate it. Another time he was just walking along and he thought it was ground over there and it was actually water and he slipped and fell down. When he slipped and fell down, everybody saw there, it was just a funny sight, they started laughing. Now there was no acrimony, there was no hate in that. It is just an incidental thing, among relatives such things happen. But now of course, again I said they sensationalized. So according to sensationalized renditions, at this time Draupadi says, Andhe ka beta andha. The son of a blind man is blind. Now Draupadi never says it like this. There is no mention at all in the Mahabharata of this. And actually, you know, Draupadi is a cultured woman. She is not going to make cheap taunts like this to anyone. If we look at the overall nature of her speech, we will see later when she becomes angry and Yudhishthira gambles her. Even when she is angry, even when she is being disinsulted, actually her speech throughout remains very dignified. So yes, Duryodhana may have felt dishonored at that time. But he had actually courted the dishonor. He had no reason to stay over there. Other from Bhishma and others had already left. So he was just staying there and he felt very insulted at that time. And I want to leave. And he left. So while he was going along, he was breathing heavily. Shakuni asked, what is the matter? What do you mean, what is the matter? Can't you see how prosperous the Pandavas are? He says, you know, I want their wealth. So Karana said, let us challenge them to a fight. We'll defeat them and we'll take their wealth. Shakuni said, you are a child. You know, you cannot fight against the Pandavas. So Karna said, no, I can fight, I can win. He said, no, you will not be able to, their strength is formidable. What reason do we have to challenge them for a fight? He said, I have another plan. Invite them for a gambling match and there I will defeat all of them. And then I will get their kingdom for you. Duryodhana thought about it and he said, I don't think my father will agree to this, to a gambling match. He's already afraid of the Pandava strength and he's afraid that they will get angry. He says, no, if you tell him, he will not be able to refuse you. So then they both make a plan. When they return, they go to meet Dhritarashtra. And, oh Duryodhana, how are you? He asks about his well-being. Duryodhana does not reply only. So Dhritarashtra is surprised, he's a little concerned. Shakuni says, O king, what are you doing when your son is in such terrible misery that he is considering giving up his life?
Dhritarashtra is alarmed. He says, what? What is the matter? What is the matter, O son? So he says that the Pandavas, they have got so much wealth, such treasury, such jewels from places we have not even heard about. So he says, what man can talk, can be happy? So then Dhritarashtra asks, what is the problem? Now they have got wealth, you also got wealth. You know, you whatever you want, you have it. He says, no, I have it, but they have much more than what I have. Says, so what is the problem for you? You have whatever you want. He says, no, what man can be happy when his enemies have more things than what he has? This is actually the nature of envy. That envy, we don't see how much we have. So basically, our relationship with possessions becomes dependent on someone else. Rather than seeing what I have and being satisfied with what I have, we look at what others have and we become dissatisfied. Say after this program there is going to be prasad. Now, suppose there is a feast, but assume this is a special feast in which everybody is going to get different delicacies. So what I get in my plate, what you get in your plate, what they get in their plate, everybody is going to have different. Now everybody has got delicacies, everybody has got a good feast, but it's different. And suppose when I have my feast in front of me, instead of eating my feast, hey, what has he got in his plate? What has she got in her plate? What is there? And instead of enjoying the feast I have, what am I doing? I am getting dissatisfied, thinking, oh, he has got that, they has got that, she has got that. Well, enjoy what is there with you. Why bother about what others have? So like that, we all have certain talents, we all have certain gifts. There are many things right in our life. But instead of appreciating what is right in our life, we look at what others have. And we become dissatisfied. And this is very unfortunate because the gifts that we have, they are actually, they can make us happy, whatever we have. It's not that we can't strive for more. But if we depend on what others have, then there will always be some who will have some things more than what we have. And will stay dissatisfied. So I once saw an advertisement, it was a car advertisement. So there's a young man driving a car, brand new car, and there's a girl looking at him admiringly. And then behind there is another young man, glaring in envy. And the advertisement was, buy this car and enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes.
So, this is a low level of enjoyment actually.
There are different people who can get enjoyment at different levels in different things. But by thinking that my enjoyment depends on how much envy I can see in other people, it's such a low level of enjoyment. So, Duryodhana was at this low level of consciousness. And what he said, how can I be happy when the Pandavas are prospering? So then, what can I do? Dhritarashtra was very concerned, agitated that his son was unhappy. So there is a plan. And then Shakuni tells his whole plan. Dhritarashtra is very apprehensive. But Duryodhana is adamant. And finally, Dhritarashtra gives in to him. Tells Vidura to go and call the Pandavas for a gambling match. Vidura himself protests vehemently. This will cause war and this will cause destruction. Don't have this gambling match. He insists. Then when they go to, when Vidura goes to the Pandavas, and the Pandavas here, Yudhishthira's first concern is, no, if we gamble, we will soon fight. We should not gamble. But just before the Kurukshetra, before this happened, after the Yajna gets over, Rajvi Yajna, Vyasadev comes and Vyasadev tells Yudhishthira that, O king, although you have performed a glorious Yajna, which is successful, still, soon, he says, I see dark times ahead. And a great war will be fought. And at the end of that war, your position on the throne will become solidified. And it will cause a destruction of many dynasties. Yudhishthira is disturbed on hearing this. And he starts thinking, what causes war? War is caused by dissension, by disagreement among others. And quite often, disagreement is caused by disobedience. So he says that, I will always obey my elders. And in that way, I'll try to avoid conflict, I'll avoid dissension. So now, unfortunately for him, this very vow that he takes, it works against him. He says, I'll always obey my elders, and for him the most prominent elder is Dhritarashtra, who is like his father in the absence of his father, his uncle. So he cannot refuse when Dhritarashtra invites him to come for a gambling match. And Yudhishthira goes, and when they come for the gambling match, at that particular point, Yudhishthira, first thing he sees the Kauravas and he says, why do you want to take the wealth which I want to use for the service of the Brahmanas? He does not see the kingdom as his own kingdom. He sees that this is meant for serving society. The Brahmanas arrange for the social, for the material, spiritual well-being of people. They provide guidelines and the Kshatriya implements it. He says, so Duryodhana just laughs and says, if you are afraid to fight, you needn't fight. If you are afraid to play, you needn't play. Then Yudhishthira agrees to play. And then Duryodhana says, on my behalf, Shakuni will play. Yudhishthira, this is unheard of, Yudhishthira says. According to the rules of gambling, those two people who are gambling, they should play. So here it is like, say, if, say, there is in a college, maybe there is some duel. Two friends have some disagreement and they say, we'll have a boxing match. They'll box with each other. So two friends, and they come for a boxing match, and at the time of the boxing match, there's friend A and the friend. That friend, they can be, say, they're rivals, whatever. There's A and B who are there. At the time of the match, A comes there, but B says, I will not fight on my behalf. He gets some champion, world champion, professional boxing player. So he'll fight on my behalf. He says, this is unfair. It's unfair. How can you have a match between an amateur and a professional? So it's completely unfair. So Yudhishthira says, no, how can I fight? So again, Duryodhana uses the same trick. He says, if you are afraid, you need not fight. You need not play. Now actually, for a Kshatriya, this is a very taunting statement. If you are afraid, you need not play. The Kshatriyas are actually fearless. So Yudhishthira looks at Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra remains silent. So actually the match is rigged. Rigged in the sense that a match between an amateur and a professional is no match at all actually. So Yudhishthira knows that he's going to lose. But he's constrained to play that match over there. And starts playing. And one thing, second thing, third thing, fourth thing, fifth thing, starts losing everything one by one. Finally, he gambles Nakula, Sahadeva. Then he gambles Arjuna, Bhima. He gambles himself. He loses everything. So each time when he's losing a lot of things, Arjuna points to Yudhishthira and says, enough, stop now. But, Shakuni goads him. And Yudhishthira has this weakness for gambling. The Mahabharata actually depicts characters not in black and white. Nobody in this world is perfect. Everybody has certain deficiencies. So the Mahabharata depicts it. Yudhishthira is Dharmaraj, but he has this weakness for gambling. So, he's also thinking that, I've lost everything. I must get it back. Let me gamble once, I'll win. He knows that decks are stacked against him, but still, if he's lost so many times, at least once I will win. When I'll get something back, then we will leave from here. So one by one, he gambles everything. And finally, when he has lost everything, he has lost himself also. So he comes devastated, and Yudhishthira is sitting as if in a daze, not knowing what to do, what has struck him. He came into that gambling match, the wealthiest man in the world. And he was the emperor of the world. Rajasuya means, essentially means the emperor. And now suddenly he is gone with nothing. He left with nothing. What has happened? What has struck him? So, at that time Shakuni says, you still have one thing which you can gamble. And that is Draupadi. Everybody in the assembly is alarmed. Says they, alas, alas, how can this happen? Yudhishthira is dazed. This is my only hope. Anyway, without her husband, who is going to protect her? So, let me put her on stake and I will win. I'll win back the kingdom. So he decides to stake Draupadi. But this time Bhima and Arjuna both are furious. But still, in the, for them, Yudhishthira is like their father. So they don't stop him forcibly. So then he gambles and he loses Draupadi also. At that time, Dhritarashtra has at least put on a mask of impartiality. And he tries to act as if, you know, Duryodhana and Pandavas are both are his, like his next generation children. But here, you know, that mask, that pretender's mask falls off and he says, you know, has the Panchali been won? Has Panchali been won? He's eagerly asking, what is happening? He's taking glee in the Pandavas' misfortune. And then at that time, Duryodhana says that, oh, now the Draupadi has been won. You know, she should be summoned into the assembly. So they call her, so they send a messenger to the women's chambers where Draupadi is there. And at this particular time, Draupadi is wearing a single dress, a single cloth she is wearing. So she had just she just taken a bath after her period and she was just changing over, doing some prayers, after which she will start her normal routines. So then at that time she says, this king has summoned you in the assembly. He says, I cannot come in this condition. He says, no, he says, summoned you. He says that there was a gambling match and in which you have been lost. He says, gambling match in which I was lost? She's shocked. He says, how could the king have Yudhishthira gambled me? Did he have nothing else to gamble? So then the messenger, his Pratikamini, tells the whole story. He says, yes, he lost everything. He lost everything, he lost himself also. And then he gambled you. Draupadi starts realizing the magnitude of what has happened. You can think, if somebody is a wife and her husband is a millionaire, and somebody comes home and tells her, you know, you lost everything. You lost your house, you lost everything. It is shattering. But Draupadi, she has such strength, she doesn't collapse. She immediately starts looking. She is also Kshatriyani, no? Kshatriya lady. She starts looking for some way out and she catches away. She says, if Yudhishthir had gambled himself and lost himself, then how could he have gambled me? If he is not his own master, how can he be my master? Go and ask this to the assembly. So Draupadi is basically like somebody is drowning, they'll hold on to straws. So Draupadi is finding out some way to hold on to stop the situation from going into a total disaster. So then the person goes and asks, this is what Draupadi is. So Duryodhana is angry, where is she? I have not brought her. So she asks this question. So Yudhishthira, everybody remains silent. So Duryodhana says, tell Draupadi that she can come here and ask this question. And he goes back and Draupadi says, he says that, you know, if you have not answered my question, there is no reason for me to come. And messenger goes back again. And Duryodhana says, so Dushasan, you know, this foolish Pratikamin, he is scared of Bhima. But I know you are not scared of Bhima. So you go and get Draupadi. And then Dushasan goes into Draupadi's assembly. And Draupadi is apprehensive what is going to happen. But when she sees Dushasana coming in, she gets alarmed and she tries to run towards Gandhari's chamber. Because Gandhari is the only lady who feels might be able to control. See, all the men just got perverted. What is happening? But Dushasana also sees what she is trying to do and he charges her and catches her and drags her by the hair. He drags her and flings her in the assembly. The Pandavas are furious. Bhima is literally giving out smoke at that time. But he has lost himself. He doesn't know what to do. So at that time, Draupadi, she rises up. She's been crying, you know, trying to get Dushasana to stop her. She offers her respect to the elders and she says, forgive me for coming in this condition, but I did not have the opportunity to dress myself properly. And she again repeats her question. She says that, if Yudhishthira had gambled himself, how could he have gambled me? And everybody stays silent. And she says, now, at this particular point, Duryodhana is gloating in the misery of the Pandavas. And he tries to increase their misery. He says, oh Draupadi, if you say that Dharmaraj committed adharma by gambling you, by staking you after he had gambled himself, then I will release all of you. So basically what he's trying to do is, he's trying to play husband against wife. You know, he is, there are always, you know, in the family, there are always some relatives or some other people who want, love to create dissension. So this is what Duryodhana is trying to do. Draupadi is very sharp. She refuses to fall for this bait. He said, I know that Yudhishthir had no desire to gamble. He gambled not because of his desire, but in spite of his desire. He gambled because his elders told him to gamble. So those elders who caused this gambling match to be held, let them decide whether my gambling was fair or not. My being put on the stake was fair or not. So she turns around and puts the responsibility on the elders. Now everybody is looking at Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra stays silent, completely silent. They turn around and then now the only person, the eldest person in the assembly is Bhishma. The onus falls on Bhishma. And then Bhishma says to Draupadi, oh Draupadi, it is laudable that even amid such a calamity, you are remembering the principles of dharma and you are seeking to act according to the dharma. Oh, your virtue is unparalleled. And then he says, unfortunately, regarding your question, he says, there are two principles. One is that one who has gambled and lost himself, he has lost everything. He doesn't own anything at all. And the other is that the wife is always under the protection of the husband. So, with these two principles, I am confused. I do not know which is higher and therefore I cannot answer your question. Now here you will see one thing, that sometimes there is this whole idea that we see that when we say the wife belongs to the husband, it is not like a property. It is a person and a person relationship. We see how it is. Yudhishthir gambles all his property and loses it all. After that he gambles himself. And after that he gambles his wife. That means his property is at one level, he himself is at another level, and his wife is at a higher level. So it's a completely different level of relationship. So in love, you know, when two people love each other, you are mine, they may say. Now that mine is not so much in terms of possession as in terms of belonging, in terms of a reciprocation of relationship. So Draupadi is actually gambled after he has gambled himself, after he has lost all his property, after he has lost himself also. So at this point, when Bhishma says, I cannot decide, then the Kauravas start gloating. And Vidura is speaking strongly. He says, you know, this is atrocious. What is happening? It must be stopped. But nobody listens to him. Now Bhishma actually here gets caught in Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means, agraha is insistence. Niyama is rule. So Niyamagraha means insistence on the rule. That's the literal translation, but essentially it means insistence on the letter of the law without understanding the purpose of the law. So yes, there are two laws, okay, that the our slave doesn't own anything. There's another law that, you know, the wife belongs to the husband. But the important point is what? The purpose of all laws is to prevent lawlessness. And what can be more lawless than to have an honorable lady being dishonored in public in the presence of those who are meant to be the protectors of law? So, you know, we should never get so caught in technicalities that our broad sense of conscience that gets lost. Sometimes we get too caught in, should I do this, should I do that? But if you look at our broad conscience, then it will be clear this is ghastly wrong what is happening. And this is so wrong that actually among the Kauravas there is a dissension, and Vikarna gets up. Vikarna is one of the Kaurava brothers, and he says that actually, what has if he asked the assembly, you should answer this question. See, in every every assembly, there is hierarchy. You know, say, if we are in an assembly of devotees, then some question is asked. So usually the senior devotees get an answer. If senior devotees don't give an answer, then my younger devotee may give an answer. So in their hierarchy, Vikarna is quite young. So Vikarna turns to the elders and he says, oh elders, she's asking a question. Please answer the question. When everybody stays silent, Vikarna says, if nobody is answering, then I will answer. And he says, there are four activities which make people mad. There is hunting, there is gambling, there is intoxication, drinking, and there is womanizing, excessive sexuality. So these four activities, these are broadly related to the four regulative principles that we have. These four activities drive people mad. And when people get caught in these four activities, they just act in an insane way. So what they do under the influence of these activities, that should not be taken very seriously. That is the first thing. Second thing he says is that Yudhishthir did not want to gamble. He was forced to gamble by the instruction of his elders. And he is a amateur who had to gamble against a professional. And that is unfair. It is because of these three reasons, I feel that the whole gambling match itself is null and void. And therefore the Pandavas have lost nothing. And therefore Draupadi has not been sticked, yes?
Is that third reason? You said second.
The second reason was that Yudhishthir gambled unwillingly because he was goaded by the Kauravas, by the Shakuni. And third is, he had to fight against Shakuni, who was a professional, an amateur fighting against a professional. That is unfair. So he says, because of these reasons, I feel the whole gambling match is null and void. And therefore Draupadi is not lost. When he speaks this, everyone cheers. The whole assembly cheers. And when they cheer, at that time, very uncharacteristically, one person gets up. And that is Karna. And Karna, he says, oh Vikarna, you are just a child. And you are speaking like a child. Do you presume that you are wiser than all these elders who are remaining silent? Because you have been so presumptuous in speaking like this, and you have spoken foolishly, I will rebut what you are speaking. And then he says, you know, nobody forced Yudhishthir to gamble. Yudhishthir chose to gamble and he chose to fight against Shakuni. If he had not wanted, he would not have fought. He needn't have fought. In principle, that is true. But for a Kshatriya, it's a matter of honor. It's like, say, India-Pakistan match is going on. And say there is a under 15 India-Pakistan match, you know, under 15 Indian players, under 15 Pakistani players are there. And there, when the match is going on, say the Indian batsman goes and starts batting, and then there is, you know, the international level Pakistani baller, fast bowler, who comes and starts bowling. You know, maybe it's 25, 30. And then they say, oh, this is the under 15 match. It's like already the stadium is there, everybody has come for watching the match. And then there's a 25-30 year old baller who's going to bowl fast. And then they say, hey, no, this is an under 15 match, how can he play? He says, no, if you are afraid, you did not play. How can the batsman at that time say, I will not play? How can the batsman say, I am afraid? It is for the umpire, it is for the audience, it is for the organizers, for them to point out this is false. So here, Yudhishthir's gambling is not, Yudhishthir's Kshatriya, he has a sense of honor. He cannot back out from a match at that time. But it's for everybody else at that point to have stopped the match. So in practice, it was not, Yudhishthir couldn't have backed out at that time. So then Karna, he actually does the most atrocious thing over there. He says, as far as Draupadi, you know, you're talking about her honor, how can she be dishonored like this? He says, she's already married 5 men. So what honorable lady can be with 5 men? He says, she's a prostitute. And as she's a prostitute, you know, she should be treated as such. Now, this is outrageous. And to call a respectable woman as a prostitute is horrendous. It's unforgivable. And even from the dharmic perspective, actually, Draupadi, you know, she did not. What does a prostitute mean? A prostitute basically means a woman who sells her body to get money. Now, even if Draupadi had married 5 husbands, still she had done nothing to get 5 husbands. She had only dutifully participated in Swayamvar, and she had gone with the man who had won her in the Swayamvar. And then by the arrangement of others in which she had no part to play, she got 5 husbands. So she had done absolutely nothing to get 5 husbands, more than one husband. It was simply she had deferred to the instruction of the elders. And on top of that, even if there is a prostitute, you know, a prostitute is also a human being. And even prostitutes are not to be disrespected. Now, so the point is, he says, oh, she is a prostitute. No. You can disrobe her. It is actually Karna who suggests this. Now, let us disrobe her. Now for him, it's not just lust over here. Lust is there. Draupadi is beautiful and they are always attracted to her. But here also, Draupadi becomes like a tool for them to dishonor the Pandavas. And at this point, when Dushasan comes upon Draupadi, and Draupadi tries to run, but nobody stops it. Nobody stops. And then she starts pulling at him. Draupadi is trying her best to stop, but she is no match to Dushasan's strength. That's pulling and pulling and pulling. And then finally, Draupadi realizes that she's no match. She just raises her anger, calls out helplessly, Krishna, help me, Krishna, help me. And as she calls out, what happens is that suddenly she's just raising her hand, helplessly calling out, and her sari becomes inexhaustible. Sometimes in movies you may see Krishna there, Krishna with his hand upraised, smiling, and a sari coming from his hand. But it's not like that. Nobody sees what is happening. Now, if Krishna is there, why is he sending sari out of hand? Why can't he stop and meet Dushasana up, you know? So, actually what happens is, nobody understands what is happening. So, Dushasana keeps pulling, keeps pulling, keeps pulling. And the sari just doesn't get exhausted. And then the sari doesn't get exhausted, but Dushasana gets exhausted. And it's like a big pile of sari over there, you know. And Dushasana just lies down. And everybody applauds Draupadi's chastity. Says because of her chastity, because of her purity, that her honor was protected by some mystical means. So nobody understands actually what happened. They see that she prayed to Krishna. And then he was protected. But it is not that Krishna is there over there. At least not in the visible form. And then, when this happens, now see, for some people, there are spiritual people who don't need miracles. You know? They understand that actually God is great and the important thing is to love God. It is not that we have to see some miracles. Oh, somebody can walk on water, somebody can produce some fruits. Okay, these miracles are there. Srila Prabhupada compares them with technology. It's a mystic siddhis. Why it's a miracle? They're simply like technology. It is for those who do not know how it works, it's magical. But for those who know how it works, you know, for a person who doesn't know how a cell phone works, you know, you just press some buttons and you talk with somebody in some other part of the world. How is this happening? This is magical. It's not magic, there's a process. So like that, there are siddhis by which certain miraculous things can be done. So those who are spiritual, they don't need miracles. Now for those who are pious in general, not spiritual. Today morning my whole class was the difference between piety and spirituality. So those who are pious, they need to get intellectual understanding to rise to the spiritual level. But when they are just pious, if some miracles happen, they think, hey, something special going on. This person must be special. And they start respecting that person. So, in general, the assembly starts applauding. At Draupadi's chastity, it's pious assembly. Kshatriyas are pious people. They do dharma so that they can go to Swarga. They start applauding Draupadi's chastity. But for those who are impious, for those who are non-believers, those who are materialistic people, determined, demoniac people, determined materialists. So then for them, they just, even if they see miracles, that has no effect on them. This is just something that happened. I don't know how it happened. I don't bother about it. So it is for those who have faith, no, miracles have no effect. That means, the miracles, what's the big deal about it? What difference is it going to make really? But for those who have absolutely no faith, those who are not just faithless, but those who are anti-God, for them also miracles have no effect. Because they are determined to stay on atheistic. So here what happens? The Kauravas, they see Draupadi protected like this, but still they feel, okay, we want to dishonor her, this particular plan didn't work. So we'll try some other plan. They say, now she has become our maid, she said, go and clean our palaces like all the other maids. And Dushyasana approaches her, he tries to drag her away again towards her. So Draupadi just moves aside and she says herself going in that direction. At that time, all this time, Vidura has been time and time again trying to stop Dhritarashtra. And he says, oh king, things have gone too far now. And he says, and those times the yajnas were very important. All kings would have a yajna, small fire sacrifice, where they would have the fire burning. And Dhritarashtra tells, Vidura tells Dhritarashtra, oh king, your sacred fire, which you had kept burning since the time of your, for many, many years, since the time he started performing sacrifices basically, he says, that fire has suddenly gone off. He says, I see inauspicious moments everywhere. Oh king, stop this calamity before everything is destroyed. So at that time, Dhritarashtra feels, things have gone too far. And he realizes that, he's also heard, in between, the Pandavas have all taken vows. You know, Bhima has taken a vow that, I have not gone through the whole story, Duryodhana also says that, you know, come and sit on my lap, he tells Draupadi. So, Bhima has taken a vow to break Duryodhana's chathai, he has taken a vow to break apart Dushyasana's hands. So all these terrible vows have been taken and Dhritarashtra is scared. And he immediately turns to Draupadi and he says, oh Draupadi, you know, I had called this match just for testing the skills of the two cousins. No, don't take what has happened very seriously. He says that, if I and Gandhari and I had done any kindness to you, please remember that and forgive and forget what has happened now. He says, I want to, you have been very exemplary in sticking to Dharma throughout. So, ask for whatever you want. He says, I want Yudhishthir to be freed. He says, although Yudhishthir is the one who has gambled her, but Draupadi preserves the honor. He says, oh, I am not saying, ask for something more. He says, let all the Pandavas, along with their weapons, be freed. He says, with their weapons, they will regain everything that they have lost. So, Draupadi, she still has confidence in the Pandavas. And then he says, ask for something more. I am not satisfied. He says, no. He says, Kshatriyani should not ask for more than two benedictions. You have asked for them, two, this is enough. And Dhritarashtra says that I will give you everything that you have lost. And he says, please live in peace. And actually, the whole result gets null and void. And the Pandavas go back. They are furious, but they go back. And in the meanwhile, Duryodhana and Shakuni are furious. He says, our old plan, we had everything, won everything, and this old man spoiled everything. And then they again go. So for Dhritarashtra, you know, sometimes he comes to dharmic understanding, but for him, his dharmic understanding is not like sunlight. It is like lightning. Sunlight is that which awake, illumines for a long time, but lightning, temporary illumination, darkness once again after that. So there is a moment of lightning at this particular point where he gives everything back to the Pandavas. But then Duryodhana and Shakuni go and they say, father, what have you done? He says, not only we have lost everything, but we have antagonized the Pandavas also. He says, just because you have given the kingdom back, do you think they are going to forgive us? We have honored them, dishonored their wife, and they are going to break revenge against us. But I feel that they will just go back to their kingdom, get their army and attack us. So we have to avoid this. We'll have to prepare. He says, the only way we can prepare is if we can dispossess the Pandavas. And then he says, call them back for another gambling match. So the guy says, what are you talking about? But he pressurizes it. There's one gambling match, and in that gambling, so again a full gambling match happens, and in that they lose everything. It's like one stake, everything is lost. And then they are sent to 13 years exile and 12 years exile and 1 year in incognito. Now, this Duryodhana was so cunning, he felt that the Pandavas, they are so famous, especially now. Earlier they had stayed in the forest, but they were just princes. One set of princes among many princes. But now, Yudhishthir was the emperor of the world. He had been there, so everybody knew him. So he felt sure that the Pandavas would never be able to stay incognito. And the condition was, if in the Agyatavas they are detected, then again they have to go 12 plus 1 years. He had devised this scheme so that they can be lifelong sent to the forest only. That was his plan. And actually, on the 13th year of their exile, the Mahabharata described that he sends 10,000 spies all over the country trying to find where are the Pandavas. And all those 10,000 spies come back empty handed. He says, what is this? Have they disappeared? Have they fallen off the surface of the earth? And all people who are egoistic, they have their flatterers. So they always keep flattering. So one of Duryodhana's friends said, they must have died already. So like that. Anyway, so now Draupadi, actually if you look at this whole incident of the Mahabharata, Draupadi is disrobed. Essentially, we see that the character who comes out brightest is Draupadi. She is dishonored, but she throughout remains honorable. No, she remains honorable. She sticks to the principle of dharma, reminds everyone of dharma. And she appeals to the assembly to remember the principles of dharma and to act accordingly. She's actually a very powerful character, and the person who comes out the darkest is Karna. No, he had no business suggesting that Draupadi be disrobed. He had no business saying that Draupadi is a prostitute. And actually later he regrets it. We'll talk about Karna tomorrow. But just two more incidents and we'll conclude. So when Draupadi is in the forest, you know, she just comes full blast out at Yudhishthir. He says, how could you have gambled me? How could you have done such a thing? So usually, you know, in a family, it's not that there can always be harmony. There will be conflicts even in the family. But the important thing is, conflicts within the family, they should be kept inside the family. Not that they are brought out in front of the whole world. So Draupadi, when Duryodhana tries to play Draupadi against Yudhishthir, she refuses to fall for the bait. He refuses to fall for the bait. Why? Because, okay, she has an issue with her husband, she will deal with it, but in private, not in public. So sometimes parents may also have conflicts, you know. It's not that parents cannot have conflicts. But usually parents don't fight in front of their children. And the children go out and then they have an argument, they may have fierce argument also. So Draupadi, she takes her issues with Yudhishthir. And Yudhishthir admits in the forest, you know, actually I have a weakness for gambling. I have a weakness for gambling. So, you know, to be virtuous does not necessarily mean to be free from vice. It means to be honest enough to admit one's vice. Now, we all have weaknesses. Now, one problem is if we admit that, okay, I have this weakness and I am working on it. And how does Yudhishthir work on it? Yudhishthir in the forest, you know, he meets sages. Now, the sages are actually learned in everything. There is a sage who is expert in gambling also. He doesn't play gambling matches, but he is expert in gambling as a skill. And from that skill, Yudhishthir learns gambling. And he knows that Duryodhana is going to try everything. In fact, on the 10th day, on the 11th day of the war, after Bhishma falls and Drona becomes the king, Drona becomes the commander. So at that time, he asks, Drona is very pleased because Drona thinks Duryodhana will make Karna the commander and I will have to work under Karna. But when Drona is made the commander, he feels happy. He says, I would like to offer you some gift for having given me this honor. What can I give you? So I want Yudhishthir arrested, alive. So Drona becomes pleased and he says, oh, he says, Yudhishthir is such an ajata chatru that even you don't want to kill him. He says, Duryodhana just shakes his head. He says, if I kill Yudhishthir, then Bhima and Arjuna will go mad. And they two alone will destroy my entire army. He says, my plan is, if I can get Yudhishthir alone, I will challenge him to another gambling match.
And I will send him to the forest. So Drona says, "Tum kabhi nahi sikhoge." You will never learn.
But the point is, Yudhishthir, he has weakness, he admits his weakness, and he rectifies that weakness. As a Kshatriya, when surprise is challenged, he cannot refuse a challenge, but he prepares. He becomes becomes expert at that particular skill. Now, Draupadi, actually, just as soon as they go to the forest, at that time, Krishna comes over there. And Krishna comes, and Draupadi is devastated. She says, "Krishna, why did you not come to help me?" He says, "You are my relative, you are my friend, you are my lord. You should have come to help me." And you know, Krishna doesn't say over here, you know, "Don't you have faith in me? My plan is perfect." Krishna doesn't speak like that. You know, when the Lord comes in this world, he acts in a very human way. And human way means, you know, when somebody is having somebody is suffering or somebody is in distress, our goal is to help them in that distress. If philosophy helps them in that distress, we tell philosophy. There are sometimes when people need philosophy to become relieved from distress. Sometimes people just need human support. So, you know, philosophy, if it is brought in inappropriately, we can come off as very insensitive. So when Draupadi is dishonored like this, nobody tells her, you know, "You must have done some past bad karma because of which you are suffering like this." No, at this point, it is a dishonor. You know, we are not meant to judge people based on their past karma. Imagine if a person is robbed, the thief comes and robs a person. And then this person has been robbed, goes to the king, he says, "I have been robbed." And the king says, "Oh, you are robbed because of your past karma." What will happen to principles of justice? Isn't it? Or for that matter, if you know, where will you stop if you start attributing everything to past life karma? Where will this stop? You know, if a baby is crying, will the mother say the baby is crying because of his past karma?
It's ridiculous, is it? No, we are meant to deal with people based on their this life karma. Their this life, the baby is crying, I am a mother, I have to take care of the baby. I have to console, pacify the baby.
So, from now, sometimes, despite our best efforts to help people, sometimes things may not work out. That time we understand there is some past life karma working. So, we are not to focus on what is whose past life karma. We have to focus on what is my dharma. What is my duty? So, for the Pandavas, it's not their concern what Draupadi's past life karma was or whatever. Their concern is, okay, we are the husband, we are meant to protect our wife. So, the king is not supposed to think, okay, what is the citizen's past life karma because of which he was robbed. He should be thinking, I am the king, my dharma is to protect my citizens. So, philosophy should never be presented in a way that is insensitive to people's human emotions. No, our philosophy is meant to enhance our humanity, not shrink our humanity. Sometimes in the name of philosophy, you know, people are in distress and they say, "Why are you so distressed?" So we see the same when Abhimanyu is killed and Arjuna is grief-struck. Arjuna is devastated by the death of Abhimanyu. And Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna, "Hey Arjuna, you have forgotten Bhagavad Gita. What is this?" He doesn't speak like that to Arjuna. Krishna is compassionate, Krishna is considerate, supportive, encouraging. And Krishna actually in a very, very human way helps Arjuna to come back on the path of duty. So, now Arjuna, it's not that just because we are spiritual, we are not meant to have human emotions. Or that others should not have human emotions. Rather, our human emotions are natural responses, but we don't become controlled by the emotions. Arjuna grieves, but Arjuna doesn't reject Krishna, doesn't give up his bhakti. Rather, he increases his service. The next day what happens is he fights even more fiercely for the cause of Krishna. So in this case, when Draupadi is dishonored, and when Draupadi is grief-struck, you know, Krishna doesn't tell her, you know, "Where is your faith in me?" Krishna tells her, what does he tell her? He says that actually, you know, if I had been there, I would have stopped this gambling match. I would have told about the evils of gambling and made sure that nobody would have gambled. But he said, unfortunately, he said, "I was not here. Yudhishthira asked, where were you? So he says, actually what had happened was the Pandavas and Krishna, they were living in Indraprastha after the Raju Yajna, and at that time the demon Shalva, who takes that opportunity to attack Dwarka, and he comes with a huge army. And he comes now, one of Krishna's sons is there, Pradyumna is there, and Pradyumna heroically fights and defends. But he's alone. Most of the Yadu elders are at Indraprastha. All the Yadu heroes are at Indraprastha. And they're not anticipating any attack at that time, because this is Rajasuya Yajna, and all the world Kshatriyas, all the Kshatriya kings are expected to be there at Rajasuya Yajna. So they don't expect any attack over there. At that time, this demon attacks. And because of that, Krishna has to rush back. And this demon is a very wily demon. It keeps appearing, disappearing. The Bhagavatam describes this particular demon's activities. So Krishna, it takes some time for Krishna to fight, to kill the demon, and then the whole city is ruined. So he has to restore the city, and he gets caught in that. And by that time, when he hears what has happened, the gambling match is already over, and Krishna rushes back over there. And Krishna tells Draupadi that, you know, the indignity that you have suffered, that will not go in vain. Those who have dishonored you like this, they will be punished. Draupadi, you're stuck to the path of dharma, so hold on to that even now. So Krishna is not insensitive to Draupadi's pain. He consoles her and encourages her to stick to the path of dharma. And later on, when they are in the forest, and after that, when the Ajnatavas gets over, so at that time, when Draupadi, there are many incidents actually. How much time do we have? Okay, I'll take one last incident from Draupadi's life. So this is actually this is described more in the Bhagavatam than in the Mahabharata. So at the end of the war, on the 18th night, Ashwatthama just goes mad. Ashwatthama slaughters the whole Pandava camp. And in that, he slaughters the Pandava's 5 sons also. And this is devastating for the Pandava, especially for Draupadi, because all 5 are her 5 sons through her husbands. And you know, she had a benediction that she would have 5 husbands, and through the 5 husbands, she would have 5 sons. She would not have any more sons after that. So that was the benediction that she had. And that's why when all the 5 sons are dead, that means she will have no more sons. And that's why they are all very conscientious about Abhimanyu, you know, as the heir. Now the Pandavas have other sons also. Like say, Bhima had married to Hidimbi, and through that he had Ghatotkach. Like that, the Pandavas had married others also at different times. But now they were not. They were not exactly Kshatriya matches, you know. It's not a Kshatriya marrying a Kshatrani. It was a Kshatriya marrying a Rakshasi, or Kshatriya marrying a Gandharvi, or something like that. Now those matches, the children that are produced from them, they cannot become the kings of the kingdom of the earth. So that's why they are very, very cautious about Abhimanyu's son Parikshit. And that's why Parikshit Krishna protects specifically. So anyway, at this particular point, Draupadi is devastated, and Arjuna says that I will get that wicked Ashwatthama, and I'll kill him. And then when he is brought back, so they arrest Ashwatthama and bring him back. Now at that time, now Draupadi's soft heart comes out, and Ashwatthama is brought in front of her. What does Draupadi think? She doesn't see Ashwatthama just as the murderer of her sons. He is. It's a grievous crime. But she also sees that he is the son of Kripi. And she thinks that rather than seeing Ashwatthama as the cause of pain and one who deserves to be punished, she sees that punishing him will cause pain to Kripi. And she will have to go, if we kill him, then Kripi will have to go through the same pain which I had to go through. And she said, therefore, don't punish him. Now, Yudhishthira also agrees with her. So this is her soft heart, at the same time it is her sensitivity, you know. Actually, it is very difficult for us to see things from anything outside our perspective. From her perspective, she has lost her sons and this man has killed her sons. She can be furious. But she sees not only from her perspective, she sees from the perspective of Kripi. And when we talk about Krishna consciousness, you know, Krishna consciousness means, we say it's expansion of consciousness. So expansion of consciousness means, Prabhupada writes, is Krishna can see from unlimited perspectives. And Krishna consciousness means a devotee also can see from unlimited perspectives. And so our practice of bhakti should expand our consciousness. That means normally we can see only from our perspective, but we should be able to learn to see from others' perspectives. The situation from my perspective it looks like this, but from someone else's perspective it may be looking entirely different. So from my perspective, see, often whenever there are conflicts, most of you have seen that picture of a sketch which from one perspective looks like a young woman, from another perspective it looks like an old woman. So now that image, is it a young woman or is it an old woman? No, it is depending on which perspective you look from. So this perspective, when it comes to perspective is not logical, it is psychological. So psychological means depending on from where we see, things appear different. And most conflicts, they become escalated when we see only from our perspective, not from the other person's perspective. When you try to understand things from other person's perspective, that doesn't necessarily mean we have to agree with them. But at least we acknowledge, okay, this is also another way of looking at it, and I understand why you feel like this. But you are seeing only this side, you are not seeing this side. So when two people see only from their perspective, then the conflict comes up, it just becomes worse and worse and worse. But here Draupadi exhibits that sensitivity. And then, what does Arjuna do? Arjuna says, yes. Bhima, on the other hand, you know, is furious. He says, he has killed our son, he must be killed. So when there is a conflict like this, Arjuna resolves it by cutting off the hair of Ashwatthama and removing his jewel. Thus he makes him powerless. See, the point of punishment is not just to cause pain. The point of punishment, actually, that's a whole different class. What are the purposes of punishing? But essentially, the purpose of punishment is ultimately to reform the person. The person cannot be reformed, at least that person should not be able to cause harm again. And if the person is not ready to stop causing harm, then the person has to be killed. So here, because Brahmanas are generally not to be killed, so what he does is, he disempowers him, so that he cannot cause any harm again. So this Draupadi, although, so actually speaking, if you see, she is portrayed as a, sometimes some people portray her like an avenging goddess, you know. She is dishonored and she causes the destruction of all the Kauravas. It's not like that. No, she is the person who is wronged the most, and still time and time again she always chooses the right path. So when we discuss about Karana, we'll discuss this theme more in detail, but I'll conclude with this point that, you know, life may dishonor us, but life cannot force us to make dishonorable choices. Dishonor us means circumstances are coming such a way, you know, we'll be disrespected, we'll be misunderstood, we'll be mocked, we'll be insulted. Life may dishonor us, but life cannot force us to make dishonorable choices. We can always choose the right thing, and that is what Draupadi demonstrates. Although she is dishonored reportedly, she always gravitates back to the honorable choices. Ultimately, she's enthroned as the, Yudhishthira is enthroned as the king, and she's enthroned as the queen. And she's redeemed even in this world, and she is the greatest, she's a great devotee of the Lord, and she's celebrated as such. So in the disrobing incident, quite often as bhaktas, as devotees, are focused on how Krishna comes and miraculously protects Draupadi. That is wonderful, but you know, not all of us in all situations can expect Krishna's miraculous intervention. And our focus, if we focus only on Krishna's miraculous intervention, then we always stay in an expecting mentality. Will Krishna intervene? Will Krishna intervene? Will Krishna help? Why is Krishna not helping? But if we shift the focus in that same incident on Draupadi and see that how she was so resilient, how she was so determined, how she was so, you know, she had a she had a spine of steel inside her. She was extremely determined. And that is an example which we can all follow. Whether we are females or males, you know, life can put us in dishonorable situations, but we can always act honorably. And if we act honorably, eventually we will be redeemed, even if we have to go through some difficulties in the intermediate. So I'll summarize. Talked about Draupadi's life today. Talked about how she was born. So the Swayamvar was primarily as a tool to get Arjuna to come. Drona had dishonored Drupada because Drupada had dishonored Drona. And Draupadi was a son. Draupadi was born so that Drupada could have Arjuna as a son. Arjuna has his son-in-law. And then Draupadi did not dishonor Karna. It was Karna who courted dishonor by being presumptuous and thinking that I can compete. We discussed about different readings of the Mahabharata also in their connection. And then I discussed how Draupadi got 5 past events. That was because of her previous life and nothing. She just consented to what her elders told her. And she was faithful to all the 5 Pandavas, and she was the person who united the 5 diverse Pandavas in a harmonious unit. And then even during the terrible gambling match when Yudhishthira lost everything, though she held on to the principles of dharma and she tried to bring back sanity and dharma in an assembly which had become insane. And Karna acted scurrilously by assassinating her character. And Krishna miraculously intervened, but nobody understood what happened. So for the adharmic, even miracles have no effect. For the pious, miracles have effect. For the spiritual, miracles are not needed. So the Kaurava stayed insolent and they tried to again dishonor Draupadi. But then when the fire sacrifice itself got extinguished, then Yudhishthira gave it back. And then Dhritarashtra gave back the kingdom. So Draupadi throughout acted very honorably. Draupadi was furious with Yudhishthira, but she took out his anger in private, not in public, later on when they were in the forest. And when she questioned Krishna, why did you not come and help me? Krishna did not blame her for her faithlessness or anything like that. He actually was very considerate and he consoled her. So philosophy should not be used to deny human emotions or suppress human emotions. Philosophy is meant to expand our humanity. Should be there to help people, and if philosophy can be used to help, that is good. That is because we should not ascribe people's, justify, rationalize people's this life's problems and our unwillingness to help them by saying that it's all because of past life karma. We have to see what is my dharma in this life and act accordingly. And lastly, I discussed about how Draupadi, she was so empathic that she could think not just when her own sons had been killed, she could think not just as a murderer, as murderer of her sons. She saw from Kripi's perspective. And our expansion of consciousness means that we should just not see from our perspective, but should be able to see from others' perspective. And that's how we can avoid or minimize conflicts. And lastly, I said that life may dishonor us, but life cannot force us to act dishonorably. And rather than focusing on the miraculous, that Krishna came and miraculously so protected Draupadi, we can focus on that which is repeatable. And how Draupadi exhibited a spine of steel, how she was so determined in acting in an honorable way throughout. And that example, if we emulate, then no matter what life sends our way, we can grow spiritually through it all. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes.
Another wonderful class, thank you so much. You mentioned about a nice example that you gave about, say, the 3D picture of looking at it in 2 different ways. One is an old woman, another is a young woman. So how do we, what is the lesson to be learned from Yudhishthira gambling? Is it that, our 4 regulatory principles, one of them, we have it as an example, or is it because dishonor is worse than a death for a Kshatriya? Or an extension of the question would be, you also mentioned about the Pandavas were dressed like a Brahmana. So in this day and age, how do we differentiate the different varnas? Is it applicable in this day and age?
Okay. Too many questions here. Okay. First question is that how do you understand Yudhishthira's gambling, or what is the lesson to be learned from that? So actually the human mind has the capacity to interpret everything in a way that justifies its own ideas. That human mind has that capacity. Whatever evidence you provide, you know, the same evidence, for example, youth is temporary. So spiritualists will tell us youth is temporary, therefore don't waste it on temporary pleasure, seek the eternal. Materialists will tell us youth is temporary, enjoy before you lose it. So the same information can be seen in entirely different ways. Somebody can say that, oh, if a person who is supposed to be Dharmaraja Yudhishthira gambles, then why should I not gamble? I'll also gamble. But the lesson of the Mahabharata is something entirely different. That gambling can get even a person like Dharmaraj into trouble. So what to speak of us? So it's when scripture wants to teach something, quite often it teaches through extreme examples. So through Yudhishthira's example, the very grievous consequences of gambling are demonstrated. And even in the Mahabharata itself, it is indicated that, you know, gambling is a vice which should be avoided. I quoted Vikarna saying that, you know, when people come under the spell of gambling, mania, then they just lose all sense. So the lesson there is that even a person who is dharmic, that person so dharmic as Dharmaraja Yudhishthira, even he can come under the spell of gambling and can act grievously. Therefore, it is best to stay away from this. We think I'll just gamble a little, but it will just be like a vortex that will suck us in. So it's best to avoid that. That's the primary lesson from Yudhishthira's gambling. From the transcendental perspective, this whole pastime is orchestrated by Krishna to demonstrate to us that ultimately we have no protector except him. So everybody, Yudhishthira, the other Pandavas, Bhishma, they all stay passive. And that, because they are orchestrated that way, they get so that ultimately, despite having so many protectors, Draupadi has no protector, and then she turns towards Krishna. So we need to make arrangements for material security, material protection. But there can be times in our life when all our arrangements, just none of them work. So at that time, we have to depend on Krishna. So that is also the principle that is demonstrated ultimately through Yudhishthira's gambling. The other question was about Varanas. Are the Varanas applicable today? The Pandavas also acted as Brahmanas for some time during Agyatvas. Yeah, see, the important, if you consider the principle, there is a rule and there is a purpose. So today morning I gave the example of how traffic rules. The traffic rules in India and America are opposite, but the purpose is the same. So similarly, when we talk about the Varanashram system, there are rules, specific rules, but there is an overall purpose. The specific rules are, you know, for each Varana there are particular rules, and there is division according to society. But the purpose is what? The purpose is to engage people according to their strengths. Everybody has to face problems in life. Nobody can live a problem-free existence. The expertise of Varanashram is that it allocates to people the problems that they will like to face. So if a Brahmana is told, you know, in a devotional context, a Brahmana is told, you know, we want to build a new temple and we need to raise $10 million for that. A Brahmana will say, come on, and after building a big temple also, we are going to have Krishna Katha. Let's have Krishna Katha now only. Why do you need a temple? On the other hand, if Kshatriya is told, you know, in the Bhagavatam, Vaishya is told, you know, in the Bhagavatam there is some verse which says that, you know, whatever faults are there in whatever you do, if you chant Hare Krishna, those faults are counted. Can you find that verse? The Vaishya will say, thousands of verses of the Bhagavatam, Baba. Who will find it? Where should I find it? Just give your class without the verse. Nobody will notice also. So, on the other hand, if you tell a Brahmana, find this verse. Brahmana will be eager, hey, where is the verse? Where can it be? Well, look and search and find. Vaishya, tell him that, you know, oh, we had to raise $10 million. Yes, now I have something to do. What is this chanting, dancing, you know? I have something practical to do now. So, what happens is that different people have different strengths. And when they are engaged according to their strengths, the problem that they face is that they see them as challenges. One of the things in positive thinking, it is said that don't see your problems as problems, see them as challenges. Yes, we can see them as challenges when we have the talents to deal with them. If we don't have the talents to deal with them, we can't see them as challenges. We will see them as problems only. So, a Brahmana can see searching a reference in scripture as a challenge. But a Brahmana will see fundraising as a problem only. Let's get it over with. So, like that. So, Varnashram, its essential purpose is not to divide people or label people according to their Varna. The essential purpose is to engage people according to their strengths. So, today, its primary applicability will be in terms of that principle. That it's very difficult today to decide either who is in which Varna. So the important thing is that we look at ourselves, our strengths. If we have children, we try to observe them and see what are their talents, what are their strengths, and try to help them develop those talents, engage accordingly. The essential principle of Varnashram from the material perspective is to engage people according to the talents. From the spiritual perspective, it is to make material life as harmonious as possible, so that spiritual life can go on peacefully. Varnashram ultimately is material. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly states that Naham vipro na chinarpatir naap vaishyo na shudro. So he says that I am not a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. I am not a Brahmana, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. He says, so spiritually we have to transcend all material identities ultimately. But while we are in this world, if we are engaged according to our swabhava, then the conflicts at the material level become very less. So otherwise, when we are not working out on our nature, then the work that we do, that itself causes us too much stress, too much anxiety, too much conflict within us. And then that conflict internally makes life so difficult that practicing spiritual life becomes much more difficult that day. So the purpose of Varnashram from the spiritual perspective is to make material life as harmonious as possible so that we can focus on spiritual life peacefully. So in today's world, how to do that? It is relevant in the sense that we all need to be engaged according to our nature. But how to do that? Usually it is that we observe ourselves, we observe our loved ones, we consult our seniors or our friends, and by that we try to understand what is our nature. We don't have to make any radical changes in our life. Sometimes this question, what is my nature? If we just leave this question hanging in the air, the mind can make a mess out of our life. The mind will say, if I ask my mind, what is my nature? The mind will say, whatever you are doing now, that is not your nature. That means the mind will keep us perpetually dissatisfied, whatever we are doing. So, whatever we are doing, we can continue doing that. But while doing that, we can observe ourselves. When I am doing this, I am comfortable doing this. Guna and karma, when we say, how do you understand guna and karma? Guna means quality, karma means activity. We could say it in today's terms as, when something is according to our guna, we feel comfortable doing it. We feel comfortable internally while doing it. And when something is according to our karma, we are competent externally in doing it. So somebody is an author. Somebody is meant to be an author, they're writing, they're comfortable and they're competent. So we can, while doing our various activities in our life, we can look at what we are comfortable doing and what we are competent at doing. And if you observe that over a period of time, we can gravitate towards doing that more and more within our profession, within our family, within our services in the temple, whatever we are doing. And that way, we can work according to the essential purpose of Varnashram. Now, in some situations, some devotees may want to set up farm communities which are withdrawn from the society, and there they may replicate Varnashram in a social way. That is good, but that is right now in quite a nascent stage in our movement. How exactly it is going to be replicated, what all is going to be done within that. So, that is still much, Prabhupada wanted it, and that is under discussion, and eventually it may become implemented based on how things work out. But that may not be directly relevant for us. For us as individuals, we can focus on for the specific application of Varnashram, that I can try to understand what I am comfortable at doing and what I am competent at doing, and try to gravitate towards that, so that the the conflict in material life is lesser, and I can focus more on spiritual life. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So you had a question?
Yeah. My question was that like the way Pandavas killed Bhishma and Dronacharya.
Okay.
As per Dharma, is it correct or
not? Okay. So the way Pandavas killed Bhishma and Drona, was it correct according to Dharma? Yeah. So actually, before the war starts, both the commanders meet. At that time, Duryodhana also comes there. And the Kauravas say that, oh Pandavas, remember the codes of Dharma and fight according to the codes of Dharma only. Shudhamana says, of course, what is the question? We are going to fight according to the codes of Dharma. But Shudhamana is also, you know, he's savvy. So he said, there must be some hidden agenda over there. Then he comes back and he says that, you know, we will surely fight according to the codes of Dharma. He's thinking that the Kauravas have committed so much adharma throughout. And now they are reminding us of Dharma. So he says, we will not be the first to break the codes of Dharma. But if you break the codes of Dharma, then we will not hold ourselves back. We will not hold ourselves back. So this is a agreement which the Kauravas also agreed. Kauravas say that we will not break the code of Dharma. But eventually what happens is they break. So now I'll talk more about this, especially with respect to Karna in tomorrow's class. But like regarding Bhishma and Drona, let us talk now. See, right before the war is about to begin, there are two interruptions. First is the interruption when Arjuna says, I will not fight, and Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita. The second interruption is when Yudhishthira actually takes off his crown, gets off his chariot, and walks over to the Kaurava side. Everybody is alarmed. What has happened? So Yudhishthira, he wants to seek the blessings of his elders. And one of the blessings, when he seeks the blessings, one of the blessings he asks is, it's a very difficult blessing to ask. He asks, you know, please tell me how I can kill you. So he has to do that because that's how he can win the war. He has to win the war. So Bhishma actually gives a very enigmatic answer. There are four elders for Bhishma, for Yudhishthira whose blessings he seeks. Bhishma, Drona, Kripa and Shalya. So all of them give very interesting answers. So Bhishma says that, I have decided that I will never fight against, he gives a list, I will never fight against, say two weapons against Brahmanas, against sages, and he says against women and against those who have been women in their previous lives. Against those who have been women in their previous lives. And actually, he doesn't say previous life, against those who have been women earlier. So the previous life is implied, but not exactly over there. So what happens is, then Drona says that, you know, I cannot be defeated. Bhishma also says, I cannot be defeated, but I will not fight against these people. Drona says that, as long as I am raised by weapons, no one will be able to defeat me. But on hearing some disagreeable news from a trustworthy source, I'll put down my weapons. Then I can be defeated. Kripa says, I cannot be defeated. Go ahead and attain victory. What that means is, actually Kripa, he cannot be defeated himself, but he doesn't have knowledge of mystic weapons. That's why he is not a great threat to the Pandavas. So he cannot destroy the Pandavas too much, although he himself will not be defeated. And then Shalya, he says that actually, O Pandavas, I'll fight with the Kauravas, fight on the Kaurava side heroically. But when the time comes, you will be able to defeat me. That is destined. So now when it comes to specifically to Bhishma's death. So on the 10th day, Bhishma and Shikhandi, they come together. Arjuna and Shikhandi, they come together and they start fighting against Bhishma. So Shikhandi has been in a previous life Amba. That's a whole long story. But Amba has become Shikhandi, and Amba had taken a vow that she feels that Shikhandi, Bhishma had been the cause of the ruination of her life. And she said, I will ruin his life. I will kill him. So then Amba becomes Shikhandi. Actually, when she is born actually as a female, Shikhandini, but then there is a whole story why she becomes a male. But the important point here is that when the fight is happening, it is primarily a fight between Arjuna and Bhishma. And then when this fight is going on, there are other warriors also who come. So Shikhandi helps from Arjuna's side, and Dushasan comes quite repeatedly at that time and tries to help Bhishma. They are fighting. So now, sometimes it is depicted as if, you know, like almost like Arjuna hides behind Shikhandi, and then, you know, Arjuna shoots arrow at Bhishma. It's not exactly like that. It is that both of them are attacking, and Arjuna is in the vicinity of Bhishma, vicinity of Shikhandi, and when the two are very close to each other, in order to not hit Shikhandi, Arjuna, Bhishma avoids attacking Arjuna. But throughout it all, it's a long fight. And when Dushasana comes to help Bhishma, Bhishma says that, you know, Shikhandi's arrows cannot hurt me. He says, those arrows are coming at me, but they are just like pinpricks. See, because the point is not just to shoot arrows, and not just to hit the target also with the arrows. Because it's also with how much force the arrow hits the target. It's like a bullet comes and hits me, but if the bullet doesn't penetrate into my body, I'll not be hurt much. So the arrows, they depend not only the wounds caused by the arrows, their force, their impact depends not only on the precision with which they hit the target, but also with the momentum, the force with which they hit the target. That's how much they penetrate, and that's much how they wound the warrior. So when Shikhandi shoots his arrows, they don't hurt Bhishma much. Bhishma himself tells this. It is Arjuna's arrows that hurt. And when the fighting is going on, if Arjuna is shooting, so to shoot the arrow, Arjuna has to look at Bhishma. If Arjuna is shooting entirely from behind Shikhandi, the arrow will go through Shikhandi. Isn't it? So Arjuna has to come out. So basically Arjuna fights, and Bhishma also fights at that time. So it's not that Arjuna is doing something unfair over there. See, we have to understand, morality is not always categorical. Morality is also contextual. Morality means what is right, what is wrong. This is not categorical. This is the right category, this is the left, the wrong category. Let me think. Whatever is in this category is right, whatever is in this category is wrong. You may think like this, but right and wrong are also contextual. So to steal from someone, to take something that belongs to someone without their knowledge, that is, or without their consent, that is bad. Stealing is bad. But suppose you have a friend, you know, who is feeling very depressed, who may become suicidal, and that person has a knife with which in the past they have slit their wrist also. They may do it again. Now we go secretly and steal the knife away from them. Is that good or is it bad? Stealing is bad, but stealing a knife from someone who is going to become suicidal, who is becoming suicidal, that is good. So what is right and what is wrong is not so easy to decide. So in this particular case, when the Pandavas, when Arjuna and Shikhandi fight together and they bring Bhishma down, is it wrong? Yes, if we simply think that, okay, Arjuna was hiding behind Shikhandi and fighting, then you may say, we may feel there is no doubt, it is wrong. But if you look at the overall picture, it is that it was Arjuna and Shikhandi, both of them were fighting, and Shikhandi's arrows did not wound Bhishma. It was not that Shikhandi was killing and Bhishma was not retaliating, and that's why Bhishma died. No, Shikhandi's arrows did not hurt Arjuna, Bhishma much, it was Arjuna's arrows that hurt. And when Arjuna was shooting the arrows, Bhishma was also countering at that time. That's the first thing. Second thing is that Bhishma himself indirectly revealed the way he will be killed. And indirectly said, I will not be fighting against Shikhandi. And throughout the days of the war, Shikhandi would challenge Bhishma, and Bhishma would just turn away and start fighting with someone else. And or sometimes Shikhandi would challenge Bhishma, and for a Kshatriya to turn away would be difficult. So what they would do is, the Kauravas would send somebody else to challenge Shikhandi, or to come in between Shikhandi and Bhishma. And that's how they managed to prevent a direct confrontation for too long between them. And on this day, a confrontation happened. And so it was Bhishma ultimately who was the person who revealed how to kill me. And in that sense, from the broader perspective of morality, it is not immoral. It is not immoral, it is strategic. Strategy means that if your enemy has a weakness, use that. Now, you can't call that immoral. Say if India-Pakistan cricket match is going on, India is good at spin batting. India has got to go to spin bowlers. So suppose there's an Australian team which is not good at a spin. So India makes a pitch which is very good for spinners. Well, that is a strategy. When we go to Australia, they will make good spins which are very good for pacers. And we don't have such good fast bowlers. And we are not good at playing against fast batsmen. That's a strategy. So it was not immoral. Bhishma had a weakness. And that weakness was exploited over there. And most importantly, he himself said that Bhishma did not actually want the Pandavas to lose. Bhishma wanted the Pandavas to win. And he himself told how he can be brought down. So rather than immoral, it is strategic what they did. Now with respect to Drona, it was different. When the killing of Drona came up, at that time, this happened on the 15th day. So Drona was actually, the Mahabharata describes that Drona, by the bad association of Duryodhana and Ashwatthama, by the constant goading of Duryodhana. Goading means Duryodhana always was accusing him, you are partial, you are not fighting fairly. You're not fighting wholeheartedly because you love the Pandavas. So that got to him. And that's how he did that terrible thing on the 13th day. On the 13th day, he arranged for Abhimanyu to be killed. It was he who suggested that six of us can attack together. So if we consider from the point of view of the violation of war codes, it was Drona himself who led a grievous violation of war codes. So the first major violation of law codes that was done by the Kauravas, and the Pandavas retaliated. And even in the retaliation, it was a measured retaliation.
Drona. It was a strategy to kill Arjuna. When he formed the Pajandeva to Abhimanyu.
Okay, wait a minute, little bit. See, okay. So what was wrong in Drona's killing Abhimanyu? Okay, the strategy of forming a Chakravyuha is not at all wrong. Chakravyuha is meant to allure some warrior inside. So the Chakravyuha was formed primarily because he wanted to have Yudhishthira arrested. Duryodhana had asked him to do. And Drona, actually what happened is, on the 11th and 12th days, Drona tried vigorously to have Yudhishthira arrested. And he came very close. Yudhishthira's chariot was destroyed, Yudhishthira's armor was destroyed. But in the nick of time, Arjuna came over there. Arjuna stopped on both days. On 12th night, when Duryodhana was goading Drona said that, I have tried my best. But Arjuna, if he comes in the way, I will not be able to arrest Yudhishthira. Get Arjuna out of the way, I will arrest him. And on that day, there was a Trigartha king, Susharma. He said, I will challenge Arjuna and I will sidetrack him. And that's why Arjuna was not there, because he was fighting with the Trigarthas. And the Chakravyuha was formed primarily to have Yudhishthira arrested. Now forming the Chakravyuha, alluring a warrior inside the Chakravyuha, none of that is wrong. But even when a warrior is isolated, all alone, without anyone else there, the fighting should always be one-to-one. Even if that warrior is inside, surrounded by all enemies, it's not that all enemies are meant to attack. It is that, it is something like Chakravyuha means what? To give an example, say, if some batsman is there, and then some captain might be very aggressive. So around that batsman, you have 10 close infielders all around to catching positions. The first slip, second slip, third slip, all that around. That's like attacking the batsman. The batsman is attacking the bowler, but instead the bowler and the fielding team attacks the batsman. So Chakravyuha is basically to get the batsman into a vulnerable position. But even within the Chakravyuha, the rules are to be followed. It is not that, there are six fielders over there and the bowler is bowling. At that time, the fielders distract the batsman and then you get him clean bowled or something like that. So there are rules that are to be followed even in Chakravyuha also. So even within the warriors inside Chakravarti, it's a one-to-one fight has to go on. So, but when Abhimanyu is trapped inside and none of them are able to defeat Abhimanyu in a one-to-one fight, then six of them attack together. And that is wrong. So that is grievously wrong. On the 15th day, Drona fights viciously. Now, there are always codes for fighting. So the code is that a chariot warrior should fight with a chariot warrior. And while fighting with a chariot warrior, if there are soldiers next to him, well, so he can attack them also. But if there is no chariot warrior, a chariot warrior is not meant to attack soldiers directly. It's like one, you have a machine gun, you fight with somebody who has a machine gun. So at this particular point, Drona becomes incensed by Duryodhana's constant goading and he starts attacking ordinary warriors. He uses mystic weapons against ordinary warriors and starts killing them. So when that happens, he suddenly sees in the sky there are some mystical beings, some sages over there. And those sages tell him, "Oh Drona, why are you acting so viciously? Now you have violated the principles of Dharma by killing ordinary people with mystic weapons. Stop this at once." Now when he speaks this, when he hears this, he's troubled. He doesn't act accordingly immediately to it, but he's troubled. And he starts thinking, should I fight or should I not fight? And during this period, he's been fighting so fiercely that the Pandavas are stunned. How to fight against them? And Krishna tells Yudhishthira, actually we have to do something right now to get him to stop. So so he says that, you know, his weakness is Ashwatthama. So tell him that Ashwatthama has been killed. Then he will stop fighting. Only then can you save your army. So Arjuna protests. How can you tell him that Ashwatthama has been killed like this? You cannot do that. That will be a lie. So at that point, Bhima is very strategic. He says, gently charges into the Kaurava army and there is an elephant division over there. And in that elephant division, there is an elephant whose name is Ashwatthama. So he goes and kills that elephant. And then he returns back. And while returning back, he passes by Drona and he says, Ashwatthama is dead. Now, Drona's heart trembles at that time. But then he thinks, Bhima is not a very trustworthy person. So, he just puts aside the word. And he keeps fighting. Keeps fighting again. But then again, the sages say, stop fighting, you are fighting adharmically. He feels, on one side, he sees sages discouraging him, chastising him, reproaching him. I think Ashwatthama killed. He feels conflicted. That time, he whom to ask? So he sees Yudhishthir and he approaches Yudhishthir. At that time, Krishna tells Yudhishthir, "O king, only you can save our army today." Yudhishthir is conflicted, not knowing what to do. And then Yudhishthir comes along, Drona comes along. So he asks about Ashwatthama and he says, Ashwatthama hatohati. Ashwatthama has been killed. But then he speaks, Narova Kunjarova. Whether it is the man who is killed or the elephant who is killed, I don't know. Whether the man has been killed or the elephant has been killed. But at that time, Krishna blows his conch. And when he blows his conch, Drona doesn't hear this. And Drona becomes overwhelmed. Oh, Ashwatthama is dead. And he just puts aside his weapons. He says, I will not fight. Now Arjuna reluctantly goes along with this plan. Arjuna's plan is to have Drona, to arrest Drona. But the point is, if Drona is not fighting, he is no threat. If Drona puts aside his weapon, they go and arrest him. And then he will be out of the fight and they can continue the fight. So Drona just decides, I will not fight. And he sits down in mystic trance. He sits down in yogic posture to do meditation. And Arjuna is just thinking about how to approach Drona. At that time, Drishtadyumna, he charges forward. And Drishtadyumna says that, you know, he has been born to kill Drona. He's been fighting against Drona again and again. But every time they have fought, Drona has easily defeated Drishtadyumna. They're just no match. Drishtadyumna thinks, this is my opportunity. And as Drishtadyumna is charging towards Drona, Arjuna shouts, stop! And there are several other Kshatriyas also say, stop! They see what he's going to do. So, Drishtadyumna, they all run towards him to stop him, but Drishtadyumna just charges forward. That particular action of killing Drona is an impulsive action of Drishtadyumna. That is not a part of the planned conspiracy. That is not at all a part of a planned conspiracy. He charges forward and he catches Drona by his hair, Shikha, and drags him off the throne of the chariot where he's sitting and meditating, and lops off his head. And Yudhishthira is horrified. Arjuna is furious. Arjuna is so angry at that time. Arjuna wants to attack Dushyanta. How dare you kill your own teacher? You kill my teacher like this when he was defenseless, when he was not fighting. This event is the closest when there is a dissension and almost conflict among the Pandavas. So at that time, Krishna holds Arjuna back and Bhima holds Dushyanta in the back, and then it stopped. So the point is that Yudhishthira's lying was strategic. Drishtadyumna's killing was immoral. So Yudhishthira's lying was strategic. So that was just, and if we see, there's no organized conspiracy the way it was for killing Abhimanyu. They'd all planned, the Kauravas had no plan to arrest Abhimanyu. Even when Abhimanyu was chariotless, weaponless, even then they were attacking him. So in that sense, we see that was it wrong? The killing was wrong, but the lying before that was not exact, was strategic. And even if we say it was wrong, still the principle remains that the law codes were to be followed from both sides. And when the Pandavas, when the Kauravas violated the law codes first, and the Kauravas also, when the Kauravas violated the law codes first, the Pandavas are also entitled to violate the law codes. So, I'll talk, so in essence, because Drona had done wrong in terms of having Abhimanyu killed, so he was grievously in the wrong. He further did wrong in terms of killing ordinary warriors with celestial weapons, and he was told by the celestial being that now your time has come, stop fighting, give up. So he himself recognized that now my time has come over. So basically, when he sat down to do meditation, that is one form of meditation which is called Prayavrata. Prayavrata. Prayavrata means it's fasting till death. So there are many warriors, they just decide that, not warriors, many sages or whatever, those who decide that now my life's mission is over, I'll stop eating, I'll stop drinking, and I will be in a yogic meditation till I leave my body. So more or less, Drona had decided to sit in that meditation. So Drona was planning to leave his body at that time. So there's a whole complex setting that was there. And the Pandava's plan was to disarm him so that, and have him arrested so that he will not be a threat to them. But it was Dushyanta's impulsive killing which was wrong, and the Pandavas themselves recognized, at least there was a dissension in the camp about whether it was right or wrong. And so you have to understand this is contextually, if you see from the broad picture, from the specific action, the action of killing him was wrong, but from the broad picture, Drona had done a far greater wrong, and stopping him from doing further wrong was a right action to do. Does that answer the question? Thank you. So shall we stop here? So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktarinda ki, Shri Mahabharata ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.